Boy, the words to that song are beautiful. Who picked that out? Very nice song, but it took me a while to get the melody down. By the way, Richard Egan, is he still here? Yeah. Thank you for the special music today. Wow. What a wonderful day to come, of all days. So enjoyed that. My talk today is called Transformation, or Becoming What You Always Have Been. There's a saying in Zen Buddhism, the lotus blossom blooms in the midst of the fire. The lotus blooms in the midst of the fire. Although I'm sure that this has many layers of meaning, it seems to be suggesting at the very least that we show our true personality in times of crisis. Some of us take the fire as anything that threatens to destroy the social mask that we wear to distinguish our true, or to disguise, I should say, our true thoughts, feelings, and desires, while others take it as an opportunity to shine our brightest when things are at their worst. Both are true, of course, because the fire behaves the same regardless of our perspective. It simply burns away all that it can until only that which can withstand its heat remains. Gold, purity, truth. Some of us are uncomfortable with having our truth laid bare, and others are relieved because, as a great sage once said, the truth shall set you free. Of course, this position presumes that there is something left, something pure, something true, perhaps even immortal, that fire cannot consume. It presumes that each of us has a true being, albeit hidden beneath layers of culture, convention, and other social pressures that cause us to behave according to the expectations of others. It presumes that we are more than what our environments have made of us, that despite years of learning to conform by repressing our truest instincts, setting aside our questions about the true nature of things, and forgetting the person who lives behind our false personas, there is something more, something essential we are born with that is authentic if only we can find our way back to it. In his important book, The Soul's Code, psychologist James Hillman suggests that this is precisely the case by presenting what he calls his acorn theory, which holds, in his words, that each person bears a uniqueness that asks to be lived and that is already present before it can be lived. Just as all that is necessary to grow a mighty oak is already contained in a tiny acorn. Among the many examples that he gives as evidence for this idea is the story of the famous actress Betty Davis. When she was only 7 or 8 years old, she was playing Santa Claus at school when her costume brushed against a candle and ignited in flames. Those nearby rushed to her rescue by wrapping the terrified child in a rug. When the rug was taken off, she later recounted, I decided to keep my eyes closed, ever the actress. I would make believe I was blind. Her eyes, they screamed. A shudder of delight went through me. I was in complete command of the moment. The story of Davis' encounter with a real fire shows how it is possible, even at an early age, for the truth of our being to manifest itself in the most desperate of situations. For her, it truly was a case of the lotus blooming in the midst of the fire, of the child destined to become a great actress, to act. The question is, did she really become a great actress, or was she always an actress, just waiting to have her innate and special talent recognized by others after the trials of life finally burned away everything else. Not long ago, I saw what was for me an incredible film, the controversial film The Golden Compass, based on the book by Philip Pullman, in which the human inhabitants in a parallel universe are each accompanied by a visible animal guide that represents their true nature. But the Magisterium, an authoritarian organization that seeks to control free thought and free expression, is experimenting on children to take away these soul companions under the auspices of protecting them from falling into error. The children, so detached from their own souls, become despondent and indecisive, mindless automatons in the hands of those who would take the place of their spirit guides. Pullman calls this animal guide a daemon, the same word James Hillman uses to describe the acorn, the kernel of truth each of us is born with that contains our truth in its fullness. The soul of each of us is given a unique daemon before we are born, he says, and it has selected an image or pattern that we live on earth. This soul companion, the daemon, guides us here. The daemon remembers what is in your image and belongs to your pattern, and therefore your daemon is the carrier of your destiny. It should not be surprising then that this word daemon, which is in the original Greek simply referred to one's own genius or guiding spirit, is considered evil, unclean, and diabolical by the real magisterium that governs our world and seeks to control our lives, pronouncing it demon, meaning foul or unclean spirit. They teach us to fear being possessed by our own guiding voice, by our own inner calling, and ultimately to be afraid of being inhabited by our own soul. In brief, from the time we are children, we learn to quiet our souls, the truth of our being, in order to obey those external voices that would turn us into compliant automatons. Out of such authoritarian paranoia came another great movie, The Exorcist, about a Catholic priest trying to exorcise, or literally cut out, the demon in a little girl. Although the child in the film is taken as the monster, she seems less horrific when we examine the supposed proof of her monstrosity. In the movie, you may recall, the first sign that there might be something wrong is when she urinates on the living room carpet. Later on, she begins shouting profanities and rejects the religion that the priests are trying to force on her. As infants, one of the first things that we learn is that those around us don't want us to cry or throw tantrums. That is, they don't want us expressing difficult emotions. At first, they reinforce this by coming whenever we cry, comforting us or feeding us or changing our wet diapers in their efforts to make it stop. Later, as we grow a little older, they may promise us a treat, perhaps ice cream after school or a new toy if we behave, or threaten to punish us if we don't. We are also potty trained as early as possible, which lets us know that there's a proper time and place to relieve ourselves, that we can't simply let go whenever and whenever we feel like it, and that there are some things about us that we should be keep private. Finally, almost as soon as we can comprehend the audible symbols that they call words, they start teaching us about the nature of the world, often sending us to church, where we learn to further fear and quiet our own inner voices and replace them with the voices of external authorities. The Bible, the church, priests, experts, parents, especially patriarchs. So any child who expresses strong emotions, especially sadness or anger or brings things out that aren't supposed to be brought up in polite society, or questions the authorities, like the little girl in The Exorcist, gets labeled a problem child. And nowadays, if the priest can't cast out their demons, many doctors are willing to chemically suppress them with medication. After all, we know that there must be something terribly wrong with a child who can't sit still and quietly listen for several hours each day. It is because of this common scenario that psychoanalyst Alice Miller viewed it as a breakthrough when, in her words, the disturbed patient comes to the emotional insight that all the love he has captured with so much effort and self-denial was not meant for him as he really was. Thus, the patient realizes that in trying to conform and trying to gain the conditional love of others, he or she has led an inauthentic life, believing the lie that one's own inner voice is an unclean demon rather than a guiding light. In analysis, Miller continues, the small and lonely child that is hidden behind his achievements wakes up and asks, what would have happened if I had appeared before you, bad, ugly, angry, jealous, lazy, dirty, smelly? Where would your love have been then? And I was all these things as well. Does this mean that it was not really me whom you loved, but only what I pretended to be? The well-behaved, reliable, empathic, understanding, and convenient child who, in fact, was never a child at all? What became of my childhood? Have I not been cheated out of it? Certainly, we must all learn to get along with others and to accept certain conventions in order to maintain civility. But does this mean that we must give up our right to ask questions, to think freely, to have our own emotions, and to live authentically in the process? Can't we learn to love each other because we are willing to act selflessly and considerately towards one another despite our many differences, rather than because we act or are willing to repress our uniqueness and strictly adhere to the status quo? Isn't selflessness, considering my needs and desires in light of others, a more pure and true kind of love than mere conformity in order to keep from being rejected? From the magisterium's perspective, civilization, as Freud said, has to be defended against the individual, and its regulations, institutions, and commands are directed to that task. But a less fearful and controlling perspective embraces and celebrates our many differences, the genius of each individual. It knows, as the great Unitarian preacher Francis David once proclaimed, we need not think alike to love alike. If, as Master Ueshiba, the founder of Aikido, said, there are many paths leading to the top of Mount Fuji, but there is only one summit, love. Then as we journey toward love, let us seek without shame the path that is uniquely our own and not judge the path of others. For there is a Catholic path, a Buddhist path, a Hindu path, Jewish, Muslim path, humanist path, pagan path, and countless others as well. Each of these is a path of transformation. But transformation is not the process in which we are changed into something we are not. Rather, it is the process through which we are changed from what we are not into what we always have been. To transform our lives, we must return to our origins, to our true nature, to the guiding principle, the calling, the demon that is uniquely our own. It is a return, not a departure. This is why, in order to rediscover our demon, Hillman suggests that we must move backward rather than forward. Reading life backwards, he says, enables you to see how early obsessions are the sketchy preformation of behaviors now. In other words, it may be that many of our disturbances, our obsessions, compulsions, neuroses, are really our forgotten demon attempting to claw its way through so many layers of repression. Perhaps the obsessive compulsion to flip a light switch over and over before entering a room, for instance, is really the demon's desperate way of saying, "Turn on the light. See the truth. See your truth." So many of us feel lost in life. We don't know what we're supposed to do with our lives, or even what we want to do if we really had the choice. Perhaps the answer is there in our earliest drives and desires. Perhaps the once boisterous little girl who learned not to talk back grew up to be a lonely housewife instead of the provocative journalist she was meant to be. Perhaps the boy whose comic books and crayons were taken away from him too early, told to grow up and act his age, ended up a seriously depressed CEO instead of the artist he was meant to be. Or perhaps he dreamed of being an astronaut or a great explorer or the scientist who would cure cancer, but was told, "You're too small, too inadequate, too unworthy, too bad." And so he never accomplished anything and never even tried. But if we want to know who we really are, we must return to our forbidden box of crayons and comic books. We must remember those boisterous things we wanted to say but weren't allowed. We must return to our original dreams. This may be difficult. It may be risky. It may mean losing friends, family, fortune, and reputation. But in realizing that the lotus blooms in the midst of the fire, we find the courage to transform our lives and come to understand that transformation isn't about becoming someone new. It's about becoming who we always have been. Thank you.